Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back another week. And, well, I'd be remiss. Another week of the most scintillating hour in finance radio. I say that now because it gets a smile out of our resident millennial, Darren. Best in the biz, though, unless something goes wrong with the show, and then you're immediately, you know, you're the black sheep. Yeah. Anyway, we have a great show planned for you today. It's actually, we've got a great interview, and we've had on so many great guests. But one of my favorite guests is the guy that we had on today, Kevin Muir, market strategist of East West Management, worked the prop desk, the proprietary trading desk for Toronto Dominion Bank. Guy's been battling markets since the early 90s, and just a great, gracious, humble guy that's just focused on doing the work. And those are the kind of guys we like to talk to. So right out of the gate, we're only going to get in, you know, half or less than half of that, or slightly less than half of that interview. But it really is one of the favorites we've ever done. And what's funny is we probably only addressed 2 out of the 10 bullet points that I wanted to address while I was talking with Kevin. And yet, right, spontaneity sometimes breeds brilliance. And the stuff that he brought up, I just thought is so prescient to investors today. It's also an interview, and I've said this one other time, so I don't think that we are the disseminator of flawless or the most meaningful it's a 1 hour finance radio on the weekend, right? I get it. Okay, but if you were going to forward a show or an interview to a family member that every investor should listen to, this would be the one. And I think we deal with a lot of investor misconceptions, a lot of retail investor misconceptions, flat out lies in the marketplace. And I promise you, when you listen to this interview, Kevin and I did not speak a lick about what we were going to talk about. So in some ways, it might sound like he's preaching what I talk about all the time, but maybe it'll shed some color on why we talk about what we talk about, why our philosophy is what our philosophy is. And if you think I'm blowing smoke, take it from a guy that ran the proprietary trading desk at Toronto Dominion and is the market strategist at a big hedge fund based out of Toronto. It's not just me that sees this stuff, guys. And I think it's incredibly important. And I think it's an incredibly pivotal time because it's going to be the counterbalance to a lot of things that the average investor just takes for granted and that has a lot of faith in. And unfortunately, those things that we know to be true, those immutable laws, especially in the world of investing and finance, are often the things that blow us up, right? They're often the things that destroy returns. And I'm telling you, we're at one of those points in history. So anyway, we'll get to that at the second part of the show. Like I said, we got to cut it off. So you'll have to go to the podcast page to get the rest of the episode, but I'd strongly suggest it. So anyway, without further ado, let's jump into the market update here. Holy smokes, right? It's the gift that keeps on giving. I've been saying that every week for the last 5 months or so. I know it's gut churning, guys, the turns in the market, but you remember that line? Anybody, Darren, did you ever see? You're the ultimate test of pop culture because, you know, did you ever see the movie with Steve Martin called Parenthood? Did you ever see that?
No.
Well, you should. It's phenomenal. And if you don't watch it now with your wife, He is a millennial. Well, hold on a second. We didn't even talk about this. No wonder you're such a great millennial. You're married and you're a homeowner.
Yeah.
I don't really even, so you're kind of not a millennial.
Right. I'm an outlier. It's true.
In all sense of, in all sense.
No, it's very apparent.
Yeah. Well, and a 4 handicap, right?
Yeah.
He's got a golf swing that looks like poetry, people. Yeah. I just got to tell you, and he kills me. And we're financially savvy. You save money. Yeah, you're the non-millennial millennial.
I was brought up right.
Yeah, you were. Parents did a good job. So to his parents out there, who I'm sure never miss an episode of the show, because it is the most scintillating hour, right? Anyway, I don't even know. What was I telling you? See, you got me off course.
Steve Martin.
Movie. Oh, yeah, Steve Martin. Okay, yeah. So there's a scene in the movie where life is kicking the heck out of these people. They're raising 3 kids, right? I could tell you all about that off air if you want some input.
is this like the prequel to Cheaper by the Dozen?
No, it's not, but kind of along those same lines, a little more geared toward the adult side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had 3 kids, and then eventually he will have 12.
Yeah, he didn't. Now, this guy didn't go down the 12-kid rule, but anyway. So he gets into this point where they're talking about the ups and downs of life, and he's talking to his 80-something-year-old mother-in-law, and she makes a reference of, I always liked the roller coaster. Some people were scared of the roller coaster, but I loved it, up and down, and woo. And it was actually a beautiful moment in the movie where she's talking about, look, life is going to throw curveballs at you, and all we can do is control our attitude, control what we can control, and just enjoy the ride. And I think markets are like this right now, where if we, and again, I'm not trying to plug this, but if you have a properly risk managed strategy, if you're no more exposed to risk than you need to be, which let me tell you, if you think your stock bond portfolio is doing that for you, it's not, and it's not going to. And I'd strongly suggest that you listen to the interview that we have with Kevin Muir. But my point is rather than being terrified by it all, know that you have the right amount of risk exposure. And if you don't, call us 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK. That's the shameful plug moment of the day. But again, and if you don't know what risk management is, learn or give us a call. But my point being, you can sit back and enjoy the fireworks. You can sit back and enjoy the show. And because you're going to go through the show one way or the other, right? You may as well get some popcorn ready and enjoy it. Okay, we got no other option, right? It's the old attitude, the beatings will commence until morale improves, right? Well, you got to take what life deals you. And what I'm telling you is that we are watching a theater right now that is screening a show that nobody has ever seen. Okay, period. Full stop. The things going on right now are historic, and they will echo into at least the next century, possibly longer. My guess is longer. And we are at that break point, okay? Culturally here in the United States, I think you can feel it. Financially speaking, the financial system around us is outdated and it is breaking down. And if we've got the right amount of risk exposure, you don't have to worry about it. Moreover, we also need to sit back and realize that with great tumult, with great upheaval, there is incredible opportunity. I believe in the Chinese language, the word for I'm forgetting the other word, but the word for troubled times or distress and opportunity is the same. It's the same word. It's one side of the same coin. And there's just the stuff going on is historic, and we're going to continue to do our best to break it down for you so you know what's going on. So anyway, I wanted to address something. This is part of the market update, but I wanted to address something because I see the charlatans coming out in full force, some of them knowingly so. I think the vast majority of them not knowing so, or doing it ignorantly or by mistake. And they're talking about this whole repo scenario. I actually heard a guy, Glenn Beck, a guy who I respect, don't agree with everything he says, but I like Glenn. Heard him explaining this repo process, talking about how this is the beginning of a bailout on banks. I didn't see the whole thing, so I don't want to. And again, this is no knock on Glenn Beck. I like Glenn Beck. But there is so much misunderstood nonsense surrounding this whole repo thing. Is it a sign of stress in the system? Absolutely. Unequivocally. Okay. But what we have to understand is that this is a lending market between banks. Okay. What is going on in the repo market has nothing to do at this point with your investments or the overall economy per se, right? It could be indicating an issue in the economy. I think it probably is, or in the financial system at large. But we need to understand something. The Fed putting together a repo facility is their effort to, and again, repo, we're getting in the weeds here, but I don't want anybody to be viewing this, oh, we're starting more bank bailouts. No, we're not. They're not putting that money on bank balance sheets. They're using it to lend back and forth. They're a source of liquidity. Is it a good thing? No, it's not. Like I said, it reveals stress, but we need to put things in context. I saw clients sent me an article the other day. The bank bailouts have begun again. You need to switch everything into silver and gold. Guys, could that guy potentially end up being right? Yes. Is what he is currently saying, is that what's taking place? Absolutely not. So it's either disingenuous on his part, or my greater suspicion is he doesn't understand what he's talking about. Okay, plain and simple. This is an interbank lending issue, and it is an issue that can be fixed almost entirely with liquidity. Whether right or wrong, the Fed has an endless supply of liquidity. Okay, this is not going to be the thing that brings down your portfolio. Okay, it's just not. It's not the way it works. I don't have enough time. We've talked about the repo facility and interest on excess reserves in previous episodes, mostly with Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital. We laid it out, but this is not the boogeyman. Okay. Honestly, I'd be more afraid of your bond portfolio than I am this repo issue. Okay. So let's just get that right out of the gates. And the other thing it reminded me of listening to people talk about this repo issue is being an ex-college football player. It reminded me of these people that talk about football, and then you hear them say something, you kind of tip your head, and you go, did you play? No, I didn't play. I played a year in junior high, or I played 2 years in high school. And they're sitting there going, oh, this is a bad call for this reason, or this is a bad call for this reason. My colleague that's with me here in the studio, we were talking about it on the way up to the show today. And a sense of pain for all of us is the interception against the Patriots. I don't even want to talk about it because it still stings, right? The interception on the goal line against the Patriots. And, oh, it's a horrible call. Oh, it's a horrible call. Oh, it's horrible. I hate Darrell Bevel. Look, this is not, I'm not a huge fan of Bevel either. I hear he's a great guy, by the way. So I'm not knocking him, but just hear me out. They made the right call. I think the play selection was horrible, but they made the right call. It's second down, 30 seconds left. You've got one timeout, and New England brings in what we refer to as heavier, so goal line defense. They are not equipped with the right personnel to defend the pass. And Bill Belichick, brilliantly in his mind, said, we are not going to get beat by what they do best. We are not going to let Marshawn Lynch beat us. Okay? What do you do when somebody does that? You throw the football. Now, I think that there's 18 million different route concepts they could have run. I'd have preferred always down there, especially against goal line package where the field is compressed, meaning you've got less space. You've got the back of the end zone right there. You don't have to cover deep. In that situation, I'm almost always dialing up a fade or an outbreaking route because then if you miss it, no one's got a shot at it. Okay, I hate the play selection, but the call was correct. It's by the book. And here's why. If you run it on second down, okay, and this is a show about finance, I promise. But if you run it on second down and you don't get in, you got to burn the timeout. Now on third down, you have to pass. Okay, you have to pass. And then on fourth down, it's untimed. You can do whatever you want. But the point is if you don't throw it there, you also become more predictable. Okay? And do I like the outcome? No, the outcome stinks. But you got all these, you know, armchair quarterback. Oh, it's horrible. No, it's not. He made the right call. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Bad play selection, right call. I still don't understand that play selection at all. I never would have done that there. But anyway, I'd be remiss. And this feeds right over into the repo side of it because thanks to social media, everybody's got a bloody loud horn, right? A blowhorn. Everybody's going to throw their, and you sit there, you listen to these different takes, like what do you believe? And hopefully we can be that voice of reason and you know, actually explain to people and listeners what's really going on here because we do have real hand experience. We've actually done it. So don't freak out about the repo issue. Okay, next up, China trade deal, right? Big deal going on here. We've said a long time we don't think a China trade deal is going to happen, but we think it's probably a good possibility something cosmetic will get done. I think we're in the process of that right now. It just feels like that. You kind of see the tone changing. I think Trump is also starting to look at some real big negatives, more bad news coming out. And I haven't delved into it, guys. I'm focused enough on the finance side of it. So, but, you know, some issues coming out with Giuliani and you know, they're throwing, it's no secret, no change. Since the guy's been elected, they're throwing everything at him but the kitchen sink, and they'd throw that too if they could. But he's got to get a win. He's got to get a win. More importantly, he's got to stop a market hemorrhage. Can't allow it. He's not going to get reelected. So I think the chances of us getting a Chinese trade deal, at least on the cosmetic level, I think they're really good. I don't think it's going to do much, because the Chinese have no incentive to do it. Remember, Xi Jinping, the leader, the premier of China, has got a lifetime appointment. He's also runs an authoritarian market. I think it's also important to remember that this is the same culture that literally starved out 40 million of their people for political reasons in the Mao Zedong era. Okay, so time to them is substantially different. The other thing to think about is that he's not up for re-election in the next 12 months. Trump is. So I've heard a lot of people saying that the U.S. has got China right where they want them. I think there's no question what Trump has done has been right. It's turned up the pressure on China. It's made them feel some pain. But just due to the structure of their government, barring something unforeseen, unfortunately, I think that they have time more on their side than certainly the Trump administration does. So I think to some degree he's going to have to sign something. He's got to get something done. And, in some ways I fault him for it, because I want to see him hold the line against China. Look at what's going on with this whole NBA thing, right? Look at these feckless, coward CEOs that are bending to an authoritarian regime that is imprisoning over 2.5 million people in their own country on religious reasons alone. That they are bending to these people for the sake of the almighty dollar. And the thing that kills me is the ones that doing it, for the most part, are on the left side of the aisle, the ones that are supposedly fighting for the people that have no voice. And I don't want to make this political, because I'm not knocking people on a political basis. I am knocking them on an ignorance basis. If you don't know what you're talking about, shut up. Okay? There are lives on the line. There is real gravity to this situation, and that gravity will have implications on a global scale. Know what you're getting involved in. And for God's sake, your quarterly profits are not worth 2.5 million lives and an authoritarian regime thumbing their nose at the rest of the world and seeking to imprison or control even more people. Get a backbone. For God's sake, have some principle. And if you're an athlete out there, have some principle. If you think Trump is the enemy of all civilization, go read up on your buddy Xi Jinping. Okay? And that's not a political statement, guys. The Chinese people are industrious. This is not about culture. This is about an authoritarian regime that keeps their thumb and their foot on the backs and the necks of their people. And they don't care what the loss of humanity is. They've proven this in the past. And watching these CEOs bend over backwards in an effort to not compromise their quarterly earnings is just disgusting to me. And what about loyalty to your own country? It's absolutely reprehensible. And at some point, I don't know when, but these people will be held to account. If not legally, in life. It is disgusting. And I want to believe that the moral fiber in this country is stronger than that. And unfortunately, it looks like it may not be. It's just disgusting to me. So anyway, I've ranted on that enough. Now, on the other side of it, the Trump impeachment question I'm getting from a lot of clients is, the Trump impeachment going to impact markets? The truth of it is, guys, I don't know. Nobody really does. My suspicion is yes. That to me would be the knock-on effect. But I think, again, let's go back to the fundamentals. If you're asking yourself that question, my next response to you would be, do you have a risk management strategy in place? Well, yeah, 40% of my portfolio is in bonds. That's not an answer. Okay. And if you think bonds, if you've listened to me rail against bonds overall in a portfolio before, and you're tired of hearing about it, listen to the interview at the end of the show or halfway through the show with Kevin Muir, guy that runs a fund, been doing it for 30 years. Go listen to what he has to say. That's not a risk management strategy, okay? That's a return strategy that has run out of gas and it's going to kill you. Bottom line. But the first thing, like I said, getting back to what I was saying, the first thing I would say is, do you have your risk management strategy in place? And then the second thing I would say is, look, nobody knows for sure, but the thing you should probably be paying even more attention to is, it's the old adage, right? I've got a pencil balanced on the end of my fingertip, okay? And I'm standing next to my buddy on the street corner, and all of a sudden a gust of wind comes and blows that pencil off my fingertip. And I look at my buddy and I say, hey, what knocked that pencil off my fingertip? And he goes, well, the gust of wind. Is that the right answer? No, it's not. The instability of the pencil made it falling off my finger inevitable. Maybe it was a gust of wind. Maybe it was a car driving by that hit a mud puddle and sprayed water up and knocked the pencil off. Maybe it was some guy looking at his smartphone playing Pokemon and knocks into me on the corner, right? The point is that the pencil coming off your finger is inevitable. And when you have equity markets at all-time highs, some aren't, but, you know, 8 out of 10 different valuation metrics at all-time highs. You've got bond valuations at all-time highs paying ridiculously low amounts of interest, right? Guys, something's going to knock it over. Could a Trump impeachment do it? Sure could. I'm not saying it's baked into the cake, but it sure could. Is Trump impeachment likely or not likely to happen? Again, I don't know. I think it depends on the news flow, right? If they can, if they've got even the smallest window to impeach him, bet your bottom dollar they're going to do it, right? They've ginned this up that Trump is the greatest enemy of human civilization, okay? If they can, they will, period. So those are the three pressing issues I want to address. What's going on in markets, guys? This is all trading based off of the China trade deal. I think something's going to get announced. We've seen some troubling signs in gold. Can't make any recommendations on there, but I would just say, again, risk management strategy, just don't be too long. You know, limit your exposure. And again, not making a recommendation, not telling you to buy. I don't know what, you know, what's suitable for you. I would also keep an eye on treasuries and bonds. Yields have popped pretty sharp, and seem to be showing signs they want to go higher. Again, not a recommendation, but keep an eye on that as well. You know, let's continue to keep an eye on the economic news rolling in. It continues not to be that great. There are some bright spots to it, though, and we want to keep an eye out on it. So anyway, if you don't have a risk management strategy in place, guys, as always, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can use our resources on the website. You can sign up for our free booklet, Common Sense Investing. You can shoot us an email. If you don't want to call, shoot us an email. Get a second opinion. Zach, what is a risk management strategy? How do we lower our fees, lower our risk exposure, and increase our upside? Well, it's not a sales process we're trying to trick you into, guys. We'll just educate you and send you on your way, okay? And if you want to meet with me in person, give us a call, send an email. We can set up a consultation or a phone call. Really, we just want to educate, guys. Would we like to get some new clients out of it? Sure. But really, we want to educate. So anyway, 866-779-RISK. Stick with us. We got more coming up. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
A lot of people with near or over $1 million in assets will mistakenly pay more in taxes in a long-term care situation than what it would have cost them to set up an insurance plan to pay for the care needed. Due to recent changes in the Pension Protection Act, these new asset-based plans guarantee a tax-free benefit for long-term care and pay your estate back with interest if you never use it. But most importantly, it's about having a plan. All your kids have to do is carry out your wishes, and you're not a burden on them. That's why I love the advice my wife and I got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has an asset-based class Wednesday, October 16th in Bellevue. This class is aimed at individuals and couples who have accumulated close to or more than $1 million in assets and may be considering self-funding long-term care costs in the future. Learn why that's not the best idea. Seating will be limited for the special asset-based class October 16th in Bellevue, so reserve your spot right now, 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com. Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. All too often, investors are solely focused on gains and are not focused on loss prevention. At Bulwark Capital, is that something you guys are laser focused on?
We sure are, Dory, and here's why. A 20% loss requires a 25% gain just to get back to even, but a 50% loss requires a 100% gain to get back to even. And that's why all of our portfolios are designed to mitigate the possibility of a catastrophic loss that could threaten the quality of your retirement.
Do you know if your investment strategies for retirement are set up to minimize the chance of a catastrophic loss? Get a hold of Zach at Bulwark Capital, 866-779-RISK. He'll send you a brand new copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place or the firm's license to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us. We got to make this segment fairly quick, condensed here, because we got a great interview coming up with Kevin Muir. And like I said, I think it's the best one we've ever done, thanks to Kevin. Just a great one about markets, life, economics. I couldn't more strongly suggest you listen to it. If you're going to listen to one of our interviews with one of our guests, I really think this is the one. But anyway, want to get to it. First of all, we got to condense it down. We got to slam a lot in here to make room for the interview. But one little thing, one extension onto the conversation that we had about the repo market and what the Fed's doing in the Fed funds market. In the opening segment, in the market update, really interesting deal. So in an effort to calm the repo market, the Fed announced that it's going to start purchasing assets again. And then they came out, or Powell said this, and he said, look, we're going to buy some T-bills. We're going to increase the balance sheet a little bit. We're going to buy some T-bills, but this isn't QE. And and by the way, I entitled this segment to QE or not to QE. That is the question, right? Whether 'tis nobler to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous quantitative easing. No, okay, I'm not going to recite Shakespeare. But this is where we're at, guys. This is like Sesame Street economics. It reminds me of the old story, actually. And you know what? Honestly, I can't even really remember if this is a story or if this actually happened. But anyway, the story goes something like this. The rage, the hot investment of this era, and like I said, it's anecdotal, so maybe it happened, maybe there's truth to it. I should probably know this, but it's a hilarious story. It is that there's a raging sardine market, right? Sardines are the rage. It's like the tulip bulbs of the age, right? Everybody, that's how you get rich. Forget Bitcoin, you buy sardines. And these two guys are on the dock and they're looking over these sardines. And some of these sardines, because they're getting fished really hard, right? So some of these sardines are just beat to all heck. They look awful. And other ones, not as many, they look good. And the guy looks at his buddy, picks up some of these nasty, half-rotten, disgusting sardines. And he goes, well, yeah, but what do you do with these, right? You can't do. And he goes, no. Those aren't eating sardines. Those are trading sardines. And I laughed we can sell them for exactly the same. You don't eat those sardines. You just trade them, right? And it's kind of a joke among guys that have been in this industry for a long time. We look at it and go, oh, no, those are just trading sardines. But this is how ridiculous this whole central bank-driven economy model is. They're going to expand the balance sheet with printed money, but this isn't QE because we don't call it QE. So rest assured, the Fed has launched a form of QE again. Okay? And I know I said earlier that they're not bailing the banks out. It's not. It's a little bit different, but it's the same thing. The point is QE to me isn't about where the money goes. It's about the Fed creating unnatural demand in the marketplace with printed dollars. That's the insidious nature of QE. And these academic technicians at the Fed who've never actually been practitioners and that are completely academically trained, even though Powell isn't a PhD doctorate, he's very much of that culture and that mindset. And, oh, we're going to do the same thing, but because it's directed in a different way, right? Because we're addressing the repo market or a short-term issue, this isn't QE. Okay, well, hey, buddy, Jay, is your balance sheet expanding and is it expanding via printed dollars? Yes. Okay, then it's QE. I mean, talk about splitting hairs. Talk about if you want to lose, if you question my lack of belief or faith in the Fed, let's just examine this one topic, right? If you want to know why I think these people are feckless academics, this is Exhibit A, right? Are you expanding your balance sheet via printed dollars? Yes, then it's QE, period. Only a room full of academics get together and decide that, well, it's not QE because it's not going. I mean, what in the end of it? What is the difference? It's just hilarious. It's just peak madness. Only academics can come up with this stuff. Just kills me. And that also brings me to another one. And like I said, we got to condense a lot of this stuff together. But we had an issue this week. I mentioned we lost a client. Good guy. Really liked him a lot. No knock on him at all. Miss chatting with him, but he was unhappy with a portion of performance, mainly the value portfolio that we run. And the thing that you need to remember is that if you are properly diversified, okay, and I know that people like to say diversification. If somebody tells you that, run the other way as fast as you can. That is how insurance people sell insurance products. Period. Okay. Diversification is essential to wealth preservation and it is essential to building wealth. Period. Full stop. It just is. You may not like it. You may not believe in it, but it's like gravity. You don't have to believe in it for it to impact you. Okay. It's there and you need diversification. But what diversification means is that something in your portfolio at all times will not be correlated to the US, to the S&P 500. It will outperform, it will underperform, but something in your portfolio should be losing money at all times. People don't want to hear that, but that is the truth. Period. Diversification means, now, will it enhance your performance over time? Absolutely. One of the biggest assists that you're going to get from diversification is that you're not going to take as big a beating when these portfolios that are 100% correlated to the S&P 500, when they're getting smashed, when done correctly, diversification will keep maybe that part of the portfolio that's been the drag, value stocks over the last 6 years, maybe that part of the portfolio that's been a drag will hold up much better than the S&P 500, will skyrocket when the S&P 500 drops. Point is that diversification ensures that you've got dry powder when everything gets really cheap. And that's where the magic happens. That's where it's like fishing with dynamite. Like it was like buying stocks in 2009. You're looking at these stocks that have pristine balance sheets. The share price has been rocked so bad. The dividend yield spiked up to 13.5%. And you're sitting there looking at these things going, man, unless the world ends, this is a 3-5 bagger just the way it is. But to take advantage of those scenarios, guys, you have to have unimpaired capital. And diversification is the only way we do it. And know full well that it will impact your performance at times. It will not be correlated to the S&P 500, and it shouldn't be. That's something you got to deal with. And if you are managing money correctly, the right way, and it's funny to me, You get these people that come to you that want non-correlated results, meaning they want you to be able to maintain value, if not increase in value, when the S&P 500 drops. But if you underperform the S&P 500 by 8, 9, 10% or whatever it is over a two-quarter period of time or a year period of time on part of your portfolio, not even the whole thing, part of your portfolio, they panic. Guys, non-correlated results work both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it too. And if you're valuing your portfolio, if you're looking at your portfolio up against the S&P 500 or up against the Vanguard all-stock index, whatever it is, you're looking at market cap-weighted indices. If you've got value stocks, especially micro-cap value stocks, which happen to be the best-performing asset class of all time, small-cap value, if you've owned them over the last 6 years, they've really underperformed. Over the last 100 years, they've slaughtered it. They've lapped multiple times the S&P 500, but they're periods of underperformance. And to get better returns, if you want abnormal returns or you want to hold up better in crashes than the overall market, it's part of the game, guys. And your performance should not just be balanced against the S&P 500. It should be balanced based on what you need a portfolio to do long term. And guys, 14 months ain't long term. A quarter isn't long term. Some of the greatest investments in the world will be painful to own, especially straight up front. Try going and buying houses in 2009, 2010. That didn't even start feeling or looking good until 2014. 3 years later. Yet if it's a house, we can deal with it. But if it's a stock, you own a stock that's negative for 3 years, people look at you like you got a third eye grown out of your head. Quit looking at it. Trust the process. Trust the allocation. And if you've got a stock portfolio that you can tell by looking at the performance, it's looked great over the last 9 years, but that's highly correlated to the S&P 500 and you just see that link, well, good luck going forward. It's been a lot of fun for the last 9, 10 years. Right. But it's this party's at about 2 to 3 a.m. Right. It's going to end. And it should remind you that what you need is balance. You need international exposure, even if it sucks wind. You need especially value, guys. I think this is one of the greatest value opportunities that I've seen in my career over certainly over like the last 25 years. Worst period of underperformance for value. You either believe value doesn't matter anymore or you do. If you don't believe value matters anymore, Godspeed. Godspeed. Throw away 100 years of history and just throw it out the window. I'm going to take the other side of that bet all day long, and I'm going to right after I do it, I'm going to be racing to the bank to cash the check because it'll pay. Just got to wait. And if that's not the type of thought and diversification and that risk management strategy, and if you're going to hear us in the interview with Kevin Muir today, you're going to hear us talking about these 50-50 stock bond portfolios that have done nothing and been trashed. You're paying 1.6% for them. If these things ring a bell, guys, which they should, you may not believe me now. You will. These are immutable laws. Nobody knows timing, not me, not anybody else, but it's going to happen. And if you don't have that clarity, you don't have a risk management strategy in place, you're watching your account just bounce up and down with the S&P 500 in lockstep, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. You want to save fees? You want to drastically reduce your fees, 40, 50, 60%, increase your upside and drastically reduce your risk and get different styles, diversification away from the U.S. market, which happens to be the most expensive market in the world right now, which happens to be, and the divergence between performance is one of the largest ever, meaning that not only is it the most expensive, but the difference between other markets around the world, it's as big as it's ever been. Nothing lasts forever, guys. Right now, risk management and diversification across asset classes is more important than at any time in the last 15 years, certainly. And if you don't have that confidence, if that doesn't sound like the portfolio you own, if you think that S&P 500 ETF is going to do you right, and that's the only thing you need, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. I'm not saying it's bad, guys. Warren Buffett and all these guys, what Buffett said was owning the S&P 500 ETF was better than you picking individual stocks on your own. You don't do it for a living. That's what he said. He didn't say it was the most optimal investment strategy. He said it's better than clients trying to pick individual stocks. And we've got mountains of data where we can show this to you. But anyway, if that resonates with you guys, time is growing short. Sun's high. It's late in the day. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can go read the 17-page academic research paper put out by Dr. Roger Ibbotson talking about our bond replacement, how it participates, you know, on average between, you know, 45 to 60% upside in the U.S. stock market. It does it without fees, with no cap to the upside, all the while being insured against loss. Go read the 17. Don't listen to Ken Fisher and all these other people bagging on annuities. Most annuities aren't good, but there are some that have been excellent. Dirtiest word in investing. You guys know it. Get a free ride to the upside, insurance against loss on the downside. If you're not properly diversified, you know, just get educated, guys. Get educated. And if you don't want to talk to us on the phone, that's fine. Shoot us an email. You can email us from our website. You sign up for the radio show, the podcast, listen to the rest of the episode, get the Common Sense Investing booklet. You guys know the drill. I drone on and on. Anyway, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. We got the Kevin Muir interview coming up. Stick with it. I think it's the best interview we've ever done, and I would recommend sending it around to friends and family. People need to know what Kevin is going to be talking about in this interview, and it's great stuff. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy it, and go Hawks. We'll see you next weekend. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors and host of Long-Term Care Radio. And Brian, here's another great question from a listener. What happens if the premiums get too expensive and I can't afford my long-term care insurance?
Dory, this is one of the biggest concerns people have that are considering long-term care planning. It seems like everyone who has had a long-term care insurance plan in the past has faced a premium increase along the way. But the truth is, things have changed over the last few years, and now we have plans with guaranteed level payments. We also have plans with single payments and limited pay options, so you don't have to continue making payments into your plan forever. If you have a question for me, send it to me at 525longtermcare.com. You can also learn about new programs that pay you back if you never use your plan, and you can sign up for one of my free upcoming classes. And don't forget to join me every Saturday morning here on Cairo for Long-Term Care Radio.
Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com. Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, I know Bulwark Capital's built on risk management. Explain that to me.
Most advisors are trying to do the right thing by increasing their clients' allocation to bonds as they get older. But thanks to record low rates, a lot of investors have paid more in fees over the past 8 years than they've actually made in their bond portfolios.
Well, that math just doesn't add up.
Dory, that's where our bond replacement strategy comes in. It goes up with a rising stock market, yet it's insured against loss in a falling market while not having any management fees.
And Zach has all these strategies in his brand new version of Common Sense Investing. Give him a call. Get your free copy. Call 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And we've got a special guest, one of my favorites. You know, it's one of my favorite guys to talk to, none other than the wild Canadian himself, Mr. Kevin Muir of East West Cap. Hey, you know what, Kevin, before I screw that up, it's East West Capital, right?
No, it's East West Investment Management.
East West Investment Management. Okay. And then right out of the gate, I would strongly suggest you guys have heard me be a shill for Twitter. One of my favorite follows, absolutely, to get access and the current updated info of the macro tourist blog. Truly one of the things that we never miss. And I would suggest you guys read it too. And you can follow him at Kevin Muir on M-U-I-R on Twitter, at Kevin Muir. And how else could the folks follow your thoughts? I know you're not a guy that believes that your thoughts are, you know, you've got a very in-line sense of self, so you're not a self-promoter. But where can the folks follow you?
Well, my tagline is, all I bring to the party is 25 years of mistakes. So I'm probably going to do some more, but you can join me while I do some more at themacrotourist.com. And you can sign up. That's a free blog post that I don't write as much as I should. I used to write a lot more, but you'll still see updates there.
And right out of the gate, I got to say this, because this is one of the reasons we love having you on. And you and I have spoken about this before. It used to make me mad. I think I was probably young and immature. But as I get older now, these guys that present themselves as, you know, like a Zeus-like figure of modern finance, right? They've never had a bad trade and do what I say. And we all know the kind. I just always chuckle because I immediately write off what they're going to say. You, on the other hand, come out and go, hey, all I've got is mistakes. And my ears perk up and I'm like, hey, this guy's somebody to follow.
That's true, and I'm always shocked at the new ways of making mistakes that I can find.
But Kevin, now this isn't what I wanted to have you on for, but this is an interesting topic that I think is it's something that a lot of professional investors don't have a handle on, and I know that the vast majority, 98-99% of retail investors don't have a handle on this. This is a game. It's like baseball in a sense. If it's your batting average, you're going to have strikeouts, you're going to have misses. And I'm sure you would echo this sentiment that you're never going to stop having them and you're going to constantly be learning. And haven't those mistakes guided you in a lot of ways more than the successes?
You're absolutely right, because you need to learn from them. It's only a mistake if you fail to learn from it. And I always kind of say it's a little bit like a casino. A casino, you go to the casino and the odds favor the house. But it's not like they win every trade or win every bet. In fact, they lose a whole bunch of them. But what they do is they try to do the bet over and over again. And at the end of the night, they're ahead in terms of the amount of money in their coffers. And if you do the same and you apply the same discipline to trading and investing, you can hopefully do the same, have the same outcome.
Yeah, no. And I think to me, you know, as I've gone along in my career, and I, you know, in all terms and in all definitions, I'm still early in my career. More senior than most. I don't feel that way, and the gray hair is coming in thick and fast. So,
well, at least you still have hair. I don't anymore.
That's true.
It was the JGB short did it. I lost it all then.
Oh, the old Widowmaker. Did you really do that? Did you do the Widowmaker?
Oh, I had my time doing shorting the JGBs for sure. You can't call yourself a macro trader unless you lost money shorting JGBs.
Well, maybe I should hop in there and try it.
Well, nowadays the newer version one is the Bund, German Bund. That's the one that everyone loses money on. Now, having said that, you know, it did take Bill Gross out of the game. You know, in his second iteration outside of PIMCO, he's with Janus. And when he talks about what his kind of regrets were, it was the fact that he went too big on that trade and he got stopped out. The really interesting thing about that is it actually, as a spread trade, because don't forget, he had it on versus he was short Boons and long U.S. Treasuries. I think that he basically tapped out right before the U.S. Treasury went on one of the biggest runs in terms of bull markets that we've seen in a long time.
That was a melt your face off rally.
For sure. The summer was actually, even though when you looked at the kind of the paper and looked at the stock index averages and you thought, oh, not much happened this summer, you could be fooled into that kind of a sense. But in reality, on the fixed income side, in the bond market, it was an epic rally that will go down in the history books.
Yeah, that was a screamer. You know, and we didn't catch all of that one, but I'm not going to lie to you. Some of my favorite trades and best trades have been the ones that I expected the least from. And I remember, I mean, I think the 10-year topped out in this one that we're talking about. Didn't the 10-year, was it 325? Was that where it was at?
Well, I think that was the famous Gundlach, the two closes below, above 3.25, and he was going to get really bearish. But I think that's the 30-year, isn't it? Let me just have a look here.
No, the 10-year. The 10-year got up to 3.25,
I thought. You're absolutely right. Yeah. It was 3.25 as of a year ago on October 30th. The 10-year U.S. Treasury was 3.25, and that went from 3.25 all the way down to 1.42 in the next year.
So knowing with our level of expertise, we were able to go long at 3.25 and we sold at 1.42. I'm joking. No, we didn't get on it till I want to say like 2.9. It was like 2.91 or something like that. And I bought it more as just a buffer in the portfolio. And watching that sucker run was just, it kept catching me off guard where you're sitting there going, man, that looked timely. You know, but, you know, it worked out better. I didn't think we were going to make a run down to 1.42. It blew me away.
Well, and even more shocking than the U.S. one was what was happening in Europe and Japan and other kind of global fixed income markets, where it just went, it went negative, and it got even more negative to the point where, people were talking about 100-year bonds from Austria that represented such great value at like 70 basis points.
Yeah, I know. And then the performance of the, and I've never played with it. So I'm forgetting the term, but the long bond, the one last year that was up like 33% or something, the no yield long bond.
Like the zero coupon.
There you go. Zero coupon bond. I mean, that thing just ripped. Incredible.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest story and worry for investors going forward is this idea. Now, you mentioned it, the fact that you used it as a buffer in your portfolio, and it did work this time. But what really scares me, kind of thinking about the next 10 or 20 years, is that relationship, that negative correlation between stocks and bonds, what happens when that goes away?
Oh.
And I think that is the next kind of financial crisis will occur, not from stocks, but actually from sovereign bonds. And I always say that, after being through a few bubbles in my day, I always think it's funny that people tell me, if I was around, I would have known the dot-com was a bubble. Well, I was there, and I can tell you it was very difficult to fight the dot-com bubble. Everyone was telling you how, the more they spent, the more it was gonna change the world, and how if you didn't own it, you were a fool. Even Stanley Druckenmiller, he had tried to fight it, and then eventually he pulled the plug and he ended up going long at the top. And he's a famous trader, probably the best trader that's ever lived, and he made the mistake of getting sucked into the bubble. Then we go to the credit bubble of 2006 or 2007, and at that time, we have these situations where the big short, and it seems very simple. Oh, look at all these guys made all this money. They forget that there was many years of guys trying to short it the whole way up, and they just happened to make the guys that got it at the end, the guys that still had some chips and were still able to bet against it, those were the guys that made the movie.
Right.
But everybody else got taken out. And I'll tell you, bubbles are very, very difficult, and especially when you're in them. And if everybody's telling you you're in a bubble, that's probably not the bubble that you're actually in. So I look at the fixed income, and I look at this crazy move in Europe where you have rates that are minus 50 on the 10-year bund. And I say to myself, how is this not a bubble? How, by this very definition, the only way you're going to make money in bunds is literally to sell them to someone else at an even more negative yield. And so when I think about what a bubble is, that it's pretty clear to me that we're in the Ponzi stage of the fixed income bubble, where when your investments are all based upon the price action or the fact that someone, the greater fool theory, that there'll be somebody that's even willing to do it at a more negative yield, it's very clear to me that we're in a fixed income bubble, and especially in Europe and Japan. And I find the fact that nobody's willing to say it, and when I say we're in a fixed income bubble, there's pushback on it. It just leads me to believe that those are the telltale signs that we are in a bubble, because when you're in them, nobody is willing to recognize them.
Oh, 100%. And it's the ultimate evolution of, the greater fool theory. And like we joked around when I was on the market huddle, You know, what do you even call this stuff now? You got an asset class called fixed income, and it's fixed expense. You know, it's
yeah.
And I want to be very clear to the listeners. When we talked about putting that bond trade on, it was just that. It was a trade. And we've said it on the show. I heard an interview recently with Mark Spitznagel, author of the Dow of Money. And he said it, in my opinion, he said it perfectly. He said, listen, the only way that you should deploy bonds in a portfolio anymore is tactical, right? Over short periods of time based on certain events. And even then, be careful. He just said that, you know, long term, like you said, I mean, the asset class is called fixed income and they're buying things that have negative yields. I mean, you know, how do you, it's just a wild world. And this goes into our whole, you know, for the retail investors, obviously, you know, for the hedge fund guys out there, there's all these other kind of things, but this is one of the reasons that we're pounding the table on the bond portfolio, because on a risk adjusted basis, there's so many things we can do with that money where we can do it cheaper and we can get much higher rates of return at much less risk. And you see these portfolios, especially in the retail world, Kevin, where they're just sucking wind and they're looking at the stocks. And I go, guys, 40%, 50%. I had a client move over to us. Listen to this. I had a client move over to us, had about $1 million portfolio, Morgan Stanley. They're charging him 1.6% a year. And that's just the advisory fee. They were all mutual funds. So you got 12 B1s in front of that. He had a 50-50 stock bond portfolio. And I just,
wow.
I looked at that and went, that is, talk about highway robbery. And, you know, I would have flipped it around and said, you know what, man, you'd be better off getting the advisory fee on those bonds than the return of those bonds. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, though? I mean,
that's a good line.
And like you said, the more nervous people get, we keep watching. I sit there and look at these retail portfolios all the time where the advisor is trying to respond to the client's fear about Trump impeachment and all these other different things. And so they're sucking money out of the equity portfolio and increasing the bond holdings. And I'm just like, guys, this is nuts.
Yeah, it's very difficult because it's not like stocks are cheap either. So then the question is, where do you hide? What do you do? And you do need to figure out some different kind of asset classes and try to find different strategies or tactics that might work. And I actually think that Spitznagel comment is great. That's a great way of thinking about bonds. You can't ever put them in a portfolio, you know, buy them and forget them. They're an asset class that you use from a defensive nature at times, knowing full well that over time there's a chance that they're going to greatly underperform. I saw this terrific chart, and it showed the real return of government bonds from 26, I think, all the way to 2019. Real return means your return after inflation. And the interesting thing was from 1926 all the way to 1981, your real return was zero.
Wow.
Meaning that you didn't make any real money owning bonds for that period. And it wasn't until the 1981 bull market that we experienced from that, you know, 16% long bond or whatever the number was, to now when we're basically, what are we now, two and a quarter? Just, you know, we're at these kind of absurd levels. And yes, they could go lower. Maybe we're going to zero like the rest of the world. But I think that that's actually something that the market is, you know, doing what the market always does, which is take a trend and extrapolate it forever and assume it's going to continue without thinking about the possibilities of it changing. And I think that when you're looking at what might change in the macro environment going forward, what you should be watching for is a shift from this reliance on monetary policy to fiscal policy.
Yeah.
And I think that we're already getting signs of it. I think that I call Trump the most MMT president that we've ever had. Some people get upset about that, but I'm not trying to make a political comment. I'm trying to say that if you look at the policies that he put in place, which was putting fiscal stimulus in 8 years into an economic kind of reflation, most Keynesians would tell you at that point that you should be paying back the deficit. The Austrians would tell you should be cranking interest rates higher because the real cost of money is much higher. But what did Trump do? He did what a typical MMTer would do, which would he said, we're going to do fiscal policy. meaning that he did some tax cuts. And
all right, we got to cut that interview off right now. But honestly, one of my favorite interviews of all time. So I'd strongly suggest that you go listen. We cover everything. Life, investing, just a love, Kevin. Fascinating guy to listen to. So go to the podcast at knowyourriskradio.com. You can also Google Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher. You can hear the rest of the episode. Like I said, I'd strongly suggest it. You can get it off our website. You can also get it off mynorthwest.com. You can subscribe to the podcast so the shows and interviews come to your inbox automatically. Anyway, we got to run. Have a great weekend. Go Hawks. Go Dogs. It's harder to say that this week after last week. Biting my tongue. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.